Okay, we're going to talk a bit about the counting, the census, or let's say the beginning of this parsha. You know, there's this like the famous debate between Rashi and the Ramban, among others, which is, does the Torah go according to chronological order, right? Yesh mukta mukha bar Torah, in mukta mukha bar Torah. And the Ramban is of the view that unless you're forced to say otherwise, Torah is written as the events occurred. Now, sometimes you're stuck and it can't be, but he's going to work as hard as he can to say that the events of the Torah record in the chronological order. So there are sometimes, though, the Ramban has to say it was not done that way. And an example is the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. Right? When does, if you look in Perek Aleph of Bamidbar, so when does this happen? When does Hashem command Moshe about the census? When does he command?
The first day of Iyar,
right? We call it Iyar. Of course, those months are only later, but for our purposes, the first day of Iyar, in the second year after they left Egypt. Perek Zion, Bamidbar Zion, right? That takes place when he's sanctifying all the Kalim, when he sets up the Mishkan. When was the Mishkan set up? Anyone know when the Mishkan was set up around? So the Mishkan set up at the first of Nisan. So that's beforehand. And also the Midbar Tes. Hashem, it talks about them making the Korban Pesach in its set time. What's my point? My point is that everyone agrees that this Sefer opens with an event that is not according to its chronological order. In other words, it was important for the Torah to go out of order, according to every opinion, even the Ramban, to begin Sefer Bamidbar with the events of Perek Aleph, with this census. And by the way, and also we know that there's a census in the beginning of the parsha, the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Chavav. The end of Sefer Bamidbar, not the very, very end, but in Parshas Pinchas, there's another census with a new generation. So you have only almost these bookends of census, beginning and end of the Sefer. Anyone know what Sefer Bamidbar is called according to Chazal? You know what they call this? Chumash? You know what it's called? Numbers. Hapekudim. It's the Chumash of numbers. So it's a book. It's all about numbers. It's all about a census. So the question is, you know, what is this all about? What's this all about? So what's fascinating is, if I were to ask you, what is the Midbar? Ah, good. What is the Midbar? If you think of the Midbar, the desert, so that, what image would come up? Like, what do you think is going on if someone's in the desert? Like,
yeah. Sand.
Sand, right? The guy's like, and he's like totally lost. There's no order, there's no structure, if you think people are wandering in the wilderness, you would imagine, like, anarchy. You imagine, like, no order, no structure in the desert. Like, it just, in Midbar, I'm not sure if it's desert or wilderness, but it sounds very scary. There's no life form. It's very chaotic. And what's fascinating is, Pikudim suggests the exact opposite. A census, and the way they're structuring everything around the Mishkan, there's order, organization. In other words, the response to the Midbar is Pikudim. So what does Pikudim mean? When you think this is a Tifgod, what can it mean? What's Pikudim? When you think of the word Pakad, what?
Remember.
As a remember, okay. Right, Hashem Pakad Sarah, he remembered, it's true. Like, what's a Pakad? So, Chumash Pikudim means, presumably, what, like counting? You know what a pakid is? Mifkad? Any B'nai Akiva people here? No, it's B'nai Akiva. Oh, we're not B'nai Akiva. It's the outliers of Oceanside community. We know no B'nai Akiva. It's okay. We can share with us in the tape. Okay. So Pikudim, pakid is an officer. In other words, if you actually look in the fifth source, by Midbar Perek Aleph, Pasuk Tet Memtes, Ach es Mate Levi Lo Tifgod. So we say the tribe of Levi don't, what's Tifgod? So Targum Unkelos says Lo Timane means don't count. So Pikudim means, on the one hand, to count. And Pasuk Nun is Vata Hafkedes Halavim. We said don't count them, but Hafkedes Halavim al Mishkan Haidut. And you should be Mafkid et Halavim al Mishkan Haidut. So this means what? A point. So one pasuk is referring to, like, there's minui. Does it mean to count or to appoint? What's the difference if you say that someone is counted or someone's appointed? Like, what do you think if someone is? I'm going to count you amongst everyone, and I'm appointing you for this. What's?
Well, appointing is much more active.
Right. In other words, to appoint means pekudim. The point means you have a role, and to be tifkodis counting means what?
You're sort of like anybody else.
You're a participant, but there's a sense of belonging. You know that you're part of a group, right? In other words, it's fascinating. The same word, pikodim, tifkod, can mean one, you're counted as part of a group. And it can also mean tifkodu, you're appointed, right? Now, how are we counted? So if you look in the third to last source here, Bamidbar Aleph, Perichav, Vayu B'nei Ruvain, so first we're counted by tribes, Beit Avosam, right, by the household of the parents, and then Legugul Osam, each individual. And also we're going to see later, so you got the tribe, the individual, and the family or paternal household. So, it's not just numbers, but there's unique ways and unique structures, I guess, not just by individual, but by family and by tribe. And if you look in the Ramban in Perek Aleph Pasuk Beis, so here the Ramban says the following, Amar Rabbi Pinchas, Amar Rav Idi. But Pinchas says the name Rav Idi. My Dixi, what does it mean that's written in the beginning of Rosh HaSefer, in the beginning of Sefer Midbar, Suas Rosh, Romuas Rosh, raise the head, Gadluas Rosh. You know, again, Lo Nemar El Se'u. Why did it? I'm sorry, it doesn't say Romu at Rosh, Gadlu at Rosh. It doesn't say to Romu, Gadlu, it says Se'u. Kan Natan Rebbez Moshe, Se'u at Rosh. What's Se'u? She'im Yisku Yalu Ligdula. That if they merit, they're gonna rise to greatness. Kamad Dixiv, like that which is written, Yisa Paros Roshecha Veshivcha Al Kanecha. That let Paro raise your head and place you, I guess, and you know, the power should raise you. This is saying to the butler. If they don't merit, Yamusu Kulam, they're all going to die. Kemadechid, like that which is written, Yisa Paros Esroshcha. So Yisa Se'u means you have a job. Now we're not just counting you. We're not just raising you up. We're saying that no, you have a unique role. If you do it right, things will go well for you. If you don't, things will go bad for you. So it seems to seem the Rabban focusing on then when you're counting one. You tell them that you have a unique role and there are consequences of your behavior. There's also this medrash in B'midbar Rabbah which says, "B'shal shenigla Kadosh Baruch Hu Har Sinai," that when God revealed to the Jewish people Har Sinai in His presence, "Yardu Yimol Chafes Ruvel Shemalachim," there were 22, actually 10,000. So it's 220,000 angels. Okay, let's do the underlined section. And he says, "Kevan Shero Osam Yisrael." Oh, it said, "V'hayu Kulam." Assumed Gom Gom, and all the angels had flags. Kevon Shiro, also Yisrael, Shem assumed Gom Gom. Once Klal Yisrael saw that each one of them had flags, Yischilu Mitavim Nidgalim, they were desirous of the flags. Amru, they said, Iluye, Ilvoi, or Lui Kach, Anu Nasim Galim Kamosam. We also want to have flags like them. The Kach Nemra, therefore the Pasuk says, Habiyana Besayayin, Zosinai, So Hashem brought us to the house of Yain, which is Sinai, which is where we got the Torah. Hashem brought us to the Torah, to our Sinai, to give us the Torah. Amalam Kadosh Baruch Hu, God said, You want flags? I'm going to fill your will. You Hashem fulfilled the will, their desires. Hashem said, each can have a flag. The fact that each one has a flag, what do you think that means? That each one has what? What's the purpose of a flag?
To
right. So each, okay, what's interesting is that there are 22,000, like a lot of flags. So He said, so I'm not sure if it means each shevet or maybe even each one has a flag. So what does a flag indicate? Why do you have a flag? What's the purpose of a flag?
Part of some collective.
Right. In other words, it's okay. So you're saying that you're part of a collective, and maybe depending on the flag, what is the flag? What else? Like what's on the flag? Like what?
Some aspects of your identity.
Right. That is the flag. The flag highlights a unique identity. Right. So what emerges here is that in Judaism, we believe, it's an obvious point, but it's highlighted here, that we are mispar, we're numbers, but we're also names. We also have our own unique identity, and it's highlighted by the fact that we have our roles, but we're also part of a mispar. And what's fascinating, the question is, does this work? Does this model work? See, there are two censuses. In the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, that's when we had all the hopes and aspirations and all the dreams that we're going to enter Eretz Yisrael right away. There's a second census at the end of Sefer Bamidbar after we failed. Because at the end of the day, so we fail. So if you look, there's a medrash in Bereishis Rabbah. It says, Vayavdei Elokim ben Or uvein Achoshech. That God divided. Oh, good. We got someone. We got a customer. Good. Shem separated between the light and the darkness. Keneged Sefer Bamidbar. This is to correspond to Sefer Bamidbar. Shehu Mavdil ben Yosei Mitzrayim Lebai Haaretz. Hashem divided between those who left Egypt and those who entered into Eretz Yisrael. So, what's the light and the darkness? So what's the light and what's the darkness here? Hashem divided between the light and the darkness. So what's the light and what's the darkness? Those who left Egypt are probably what? They're the darkness. And those who entered Eretz Yisrael are the light. So what's clear is that we were a failure. We failed. Right? We didn't succeed. And what's interesting is that we begin Sefer Bamidbar with this kind of like ideal structure. Like we're in the desert, we're in the wilderness, and it's total chaos. It's total anarchy. And then Hashem commands Moshe to have this machaneh, this structure, and everyone is following along, and everyone is his own individual, his own unique quality, and everything seems to be going great. And then we fail. The question is there a difference between the first census and the last census? So I think there's one difference. There's one significant difference. If you look in, let's go back. If you look in Bamidbar Aleph Pasuk Beis. So what's the counting? There's a census at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. There's a census at the end. In the beginning, what is it? Lemishpachosam, Levesavosam. To their families, to their head of their house, their houses, b'mispar shemos, with their number, their names, each one's name, kol zachor l'gugulosam, each male, each individual, and then right. So there is this mispar shemos. There is, you must count b'mispar shemos. Which is interesting in Perek Chavav, it says suris rosh chodas bnei Yisrael. How you doing? Okay. You want to get it?
Thank you.
We left some chillin' for you, Alex. Okay. We're trying to highlight the difference between the first census and the last census. The first census was an abysmal failure. The second census worked out. The first census was b'mispar shemos. The second census, there's no mention of b'mispar shemos. What's the difference? What does it mean b'vispar shemos? What does that mean b'vispar shemos?
The focus
on the first. Right. The first. Right. In the first census, we're trying to achieve it all. We're counting each one as part of the group, but we're also highlighting each one's individuality. Okay. And the Balaturim writes, b'vispar shemos k'siv kan. Uva Parshas Pinchas, and a Parshas Pinchas, Lo Ksiv Ba'osu Minyav Yisbar Shemos. There's no mention of Yisbar Shemos. So the Baal Turim says, Kasvu Kan, Lo Dia Shloshinu Shmosu Mitzrayim. It wants to tell you here they didn't change their names. You know, famously, the Egyptians, we said, Bnei Yisrael kept their names, cultural identity, okay? It's one way of looking at it. But Rav Hirsch says the following. What's been Yisbar Shemos in this week's Parsha? Bishas HaMifkad, Koreim Bishmo Shel Kol Yachid. When they count everyone, they're not just saying number one, number two, number three, number four. No, they say Reuven and Yankel and Shloimi and Chaim, whatever it is. They count everyone's name individually, right? Why am I connected to the group? Because of my individuality. And so it makes you feel good. It gives you a sense of meaning, which is wonderful. Unless what? Like, what's the danger, I guess, of, what's the danger of counting each one individually? And what's the danger of always giving someone meaning? It's a nice thing, obviously.
You take away from the group.
Yeah, the group, right? Now, there's always this kind of, like, balance that we're trying to, like, giving individuals credit, and then they realize, like, it's all about me. Like, there's always this kind of, like, balance, I think, you know, that we're trying to find. I think, like, sometimes, like, the Torah sometimes presents, like, an ideal picture, and then it tells you why they fail. So there's this kind of Mispar Shemos ideal. It's fascinating. Right? In this week's Parsha, also the word Tifkedu Osam. What's Tifkedu? You should appoint them. In other words, give every single person a sense of Chashivus, a sense of importance, which is theoretically wonderful. But, unfortunately, it didn't succeed because the people took it too much to themselves. They didn't care as much about the tzibor. Maybe you can say, you know, Korach thought too much of themselves, or the Meraglim thought too much of themselves. In other words, you got to try to obviously balance the individual needs and the needs of the tzibor. So what's interesting, in the second sentence, there's no Bemispar Shemos. There's no Tifkedu. So the goal of the second sentence was simply strength in numbers. The first sentence is I'm significant in my own right. If you look at the last source, the Sephorno says, Su'u es rosh l'sadrom she'ikantzu la'aretz miyad ishal diglo biltin milchama. You know what would have happened had we not sinned? We would have gone straight in without a war, with our flag without a war. Elishifnu ha'umot bipaneha. He says that what would have happened had we gone in? We've had, if you think about it, each individual, so much confidence. And it would have been miraculous. We would have gone in, everyone would have been afraid of us, they all would have left. There would have been no wars. The Girgashi left. Yerushalmi says Girgashi, one of the seven nations, left before we got in. And so he said, maybe Mishkot HaGirgashi. Uve Kilko Meraglim. Once the Meraglim sinned, Hosifa Sheva Umos Lahara. Then the seven nations got worse for 40 years and you had to destroy them. They would have left and didn't leave. In other words, the initial plan was Ishal Diglo, conquer without opposition and assert sovereignty because of the flag, because of our exalted status. By the second generation, the Bnei Yisrael did not feel confident individually, and that's why the other nations stayed and fought. In other words, you know, they have this project for the Holocaust. It's called Names Not Numbers, right? So in the first generation, it was names and numbers. It was names and numbers. But we weren't Zocha, so it was second generation with just numbers, which is not great. But maybe we were only successful as a unit, but not individual tribes. By the way, let me ask you this question. Let's test your knowledge of Sefer Yehoshua. To what extent do you think they were successful in Sefer Yehoshua to conquer the land? How would you evaluate? Are you feeling with Sefer Yehoshua? How successful were they in conquering the land? Were they somewhat successful? Do you get a sense? So they did enter the Eretz Yisrael. You did some of the.
It's hard to remember where it is.
Okay, it's okay. It's fine. Yeah, I feel like that about the Daf. So right. I think it's fair. That's fair. So if you look. The first, like, 12 prakim of, I know, 12 prakim of Sefer Yeshua, it's like, they're like steamrolling through the opposition. And they win the major battles.
They don't get all the way done, though.
But they didn't get all the way done. Right. In other words, Sefer Yeshua is all about, like, the big battles, and they take out the major opposition. And then the second part is that then now the individual tribes, okay, we defeated the major armies, now individual tribes, you go and do your stuff. You know, you finish up. And the strong tribes, like Yosef, I mean, Shev, Menashe, Ephraim, Yehuda, like the stronger tribes conquered most of the land. Because there were tribes, there were foreign tribes that were still in the land. Why is that? Because they won the big battles, but the individual tribes were not successful. In other words, there was this like ideal when Bnei Yisrael left Egypt. And the ideal was individuals, a lot of confidence, you know, and the whole nation, a lot of confidence, doesn't work. It's failure. So the next generation, it's just strength in numbers. Okay, we got to work as a unit. So they are partially successful because they win the major battles, but they're not complete successful. They don't fully like wipe out the opposition. And I think that you know the beginning of Sefer, and maybe that's why again, just the beginning of the Shir, we mentioned that the Torah goes out of its way, even according to the Rabban, this is out of order. In other words, the census is not the first thing that happened in Sefer Midbar, clear according to everyone. But it wants to maybe to contrast, you know, Chumash HaPekudim, there's this ideal vision of this kind of like dual goal of numbers and names and how like you have to think about both things. You can't be as, you know, those who heard Rabbi Brody's talk last Shabbos, remember he said, you can't be a fundamentalist. You can't only care about, you know, human rights. And it was a thing, and you can't only care about, you know, the broader Israel. The great Israel, right? You can't have one or the other. You can't be a fundamentalist. So here also, you can't be a fundamentalist in terms of names and numbers, right? In other words, you need to find the way as best as you can. Now, where people draw the line, so that's where the tension is. Clearly, the Bnei Yisrael were too focused on the names, maybe, didn't work out, because some people were so focused on themselves, according to one approach, the 12 tribes, the 12 Meraglim, they cared about themselves too much, and they were, you know, they wanted to remain in power, they didn't think they'd remain in power. There are different questions why the 12 Meraglim sinned and why they caused others to sin, but they're clearly failures of individuals who they didn't have faith in the community. In other words, they were so focused on themselves, they didn't have faith in the community. So then the next generation is, it's not about individuals, it's all about the community. We're only focused on the community, we're not focused on individuals. So that, and it was moderately successful, because we did enter the Eretz Yisrael, but we weren't completely successful. And I think that really, much of our religion, if you think about our religion, to be a Jewish person, we don't believe, like, the way the rabbi structured it, you can't be a Jew like in isolation. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You know, when people want to convert to Judaism, what do they say? You gotta, not for no reason, they say, like, you gotta, someone wants to convert to Judaism, so at least the base in America or the conversion court associated with base in America will say that you can't, if you're gonna live, if let's say you say, I swear, I'm telling you, I'm going to keep kosher, and I'm not picking on Freeport, but I don't think it's an Orthodox community in Freeport. They say I'm gonna live in Freeport, but I want to, you know, I have a house there. I can't sell, whatever the case is. I'm going to remain frum, and I'm going to become a totally halachic Jew. We believe it's very hard to observe real Judaism out of a community setting. Like so many mitzvahs, so many halachos, we know this only work within a communal setting, and so like it's not about. You know, myself, the individual, it works as a communal setting. And our challenge, I think, in Judaism, we always have to keep both things in mind. And you know, and some of us are more like community-minded people, and some of us are more individual, like, you know, some of us are more names people, some of us are more numbers people. I always say, whatever you're the more of, you should focus on the other thing. I say, you should, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're more this, so you work on that. If you're more that, you got to work on this. Like, always try to balance those two and you know, like, you know, there's some people who, like, when they're in a community setting, so they keep certain halachos, and then when they go on vacation in private, they're a little more liberal in terms of their observance. We want to try to, it's okay, you know, it happens.
Yeah,
people have mentioned that.
I'm saying there are certain pressures as part of a community, religious pressures, okay. So the goal is really to try to balance both. And the Torah, in the beginning of Bamidbar, the Torah is presenting an optimal picture. It presents how it failed and how we had a more of a b'di'evit situation. But we should leave this realizing that this should be our goal. Our goal should be a group of people. Everyone has their own role, their own flag, their own chashivus, their own importance. Everyone surrounding what? The Mishkan in the middle, but everyone has their own uniqueness. Feeling the critical importance of the community while asserting my individuality and how to balance that. If we struggle with both of those factors all the time, then you know you're succeeding. Okay?